In his 1961 inaugural speech, John F. Kennedy said, "Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans, born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace." Given the ambitions of his father and family, John Kennedy's decision to pursue a public life was not wholly altruistic. But in his eloquent inaugural speech, he gave voice to his generation on the issues of peace and war, and also on the importance of entering the arena beyond the battlefield. In the post-war years, politics was a noble calling and a natural extension of the lives of the men and women who had made so many sacrifices and learned so many lessons during the war. Their ideologies and their ambitions spanned a broad spectrum, but they came to the public arena determined to have their say in the future of the country and of the world. Some, such as Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy, a tail gunner in the Army Air Corps during the war, emerged with a dark and twisted view of what was necessary to advance the cause of liberty. Others drew entirely different lessons from their common experience. John Kennedy, the scion of a rich and powerful Boston family, a decorated Navy veteran, ran as a Democrat against Republican Richard Nixon, also a Navy veteran, the son of a poor Quaker family from California. Senators Barry Goldwater and George McGovern were both combat pilots from Western states during the war, and when they landed in the U.S. Senate, they were at opposite ends of the political field. From Eisenhower through George Bush, all but one American president was a veteran of World War II. The exception was Jimmy Carter, a Naval Academy graduate who was commissioned as an officer just as the war ended. From the 50s through the 70s, the halls of Congress were dominated by World War II veterans, senators such as Robert Taft, Mr. Republican, the Ohio pillar of conservatism, was a Navy veteran. A fellow Midwesterner, Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois, a classic liberal, was a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps. Senators Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin, George McGovern of South Dakota, Edmund Muskie of Maine, Jacob Javits and Pat Moynihan of New York, Warren Magnuson of Washington, George Smathers of Florida, John Tower of Texas, John Glenn of Ohio, Mark Hatfield of Oregon, Frank Church of Idaho, all of them World War II veterans. They came out of the same war to their political posts, but they were not in lockstep in their ideologies. They had varied views on social, diplomatic, and military questions. They were immediately faced with major challenges in determining how to deal with the Soviet Union, the Cold War, the construct of a formal Western military alliance, China under communism, the great public works projects in America, and the unresolved issue of race. They brought a deeply personal understanding of the consequences of war as an instrument of national policy. After all, they were the young men another generation of old men had sent off to war. Now, they had in their hands those same decisions for another generation of young Americans. Again, they were not always in lockstep. Vietnam deeply divided the country and the World War II generation. The leading hawks and some of the most eloquent doves were from that generation. It was also a cultural schism. Those in political life who publicly supported the war effort while wrestling with private doubts had a visceral antipathy for the long hair, the language, and the flag-burning ways of the anti-war demonstrators. Then, too, they knew that in the working-class neighborhoods and on the farms, there was not the same ratio of deferments and little access to alternative service. No two politicians symbolized the differences with greater clarity than two friends in the U.S. Senate, both members of the Republican Party, Bob Dole of Russell, Kansas, and Mark Hatfield of Salem, Oregon. One, the son of a small-town jack-of-all-trades, the other the son of a railroad blacksmith. One an infantry lieutenant, the other a Navy ensign. The wartime exploits of Bob Dole are well known by now. He was a young lieutenant out of Kansas when he was gravely wounded as he led his squad from the 10th Mountain Division against a fortified German position in the Italian Alps. He almost died before he was evacuated to the United States for a long series of operations and excruciating therapy in what turned out to be the impossible task of completely saving the use of his right arm. The terrible wound came in a flash of enemy fire on an Italian hillside. The recovery took 3 years and 3 months, during which he almost died as a result of infections and other complications. Dole's experience in the war and the sacrifices of his working-class parents and friends in the small, hard-scrabble town of Russell, Kansas, to help him recover from his injuries were appropriately familiar themes in his political career, especially in his campaign for president against Bill Clinton. It was always touching when this complex, proud man, so private and even abrupt when it came to other personal matters, talked about that time in his life. Choking up as he described how his father, with so few means, struggled to make the train trip from Kansas to Chicago to see his badly injured son. How his mother, even though she hated smoking, held his cigarettes for him as he lay in a hospital bed, barely able to move either arm in the early going. How the people of Russell, Kansas, set up cigar boxes in businesses along Main Street and labeled them the Bob Dole Fund. They raised $1,800 for his medical fees, mostly through quarters and half dollars. One of his neighbors was as poor as the Doles, but he wanted to do something. So, the senator remembers with an affectionate chuckle, he brought me a duck. Couldn't afford anything else, so he brought me a live duck. It may be difficult for current generations to understand just how much poverty there was across America, even after the war. Working-class families lived right on the margins, with very little left over. They were used to it. It had been that way since the beginning of the 30s, especially in rural America. Indeed, joining the Army was a step up for many after the Depression. Dole remembers, it was a good deal. You got a good pair of boots, 3 meals a day, new clothing, a new rifle. It was the most many young Americans had ever had. Although Dole has been gone from the neighborhoods and the economic constraints of Russell, Kansas, for a long time now, those early experiences still shape his attitude. He keeps in his richly appointed Washington, D.C. office a picture of his father dressed in his Key brand overalls, pointing out that's what his dad wore to work every day. For all of his power, celebrity, and prosperity, in his emotional makeup, Dole isn't that far removed from his Great Plains roots and formative experiences. The financial deprivations of his childhood, however, were not enough to prepare him for the terrible price he paid in the war. Dole admits he was bitter at times, that he felt sorry for himself. Even now, he occasionally goes back over that fateful day when he was hit. The assault had been delayed for a day because of the death of Franklin Roosevelt, the beloved president who was also commander-in-chief. Dole was greatly saddened by Roosevelt's passing, but he sometimes wonders, what if he hadn't died that day? What if we had moved out on schedule? Would I have been wounded? Once he fully understood that he would never be completely the same again, that he couldn't turn back the clock, he decided to make up for lost time. By his own admission, before the war, he wasn't much of a student. He was a good-time fraternity boy at the University of Kansas. After the war, life was changed forever. He was disabled. He'd spent 5 years either in uniform or in hospitals. He took the GI Bill and headed for the University of Arizona Law School. The government provided him with a left-handed typewriter, a recording machine so he could take notes, and a car with a left-handed shift. As he says now, 50 years later, and an adult lifetime in politics, talk about a generous government. It did not, however, make Dole a champion of government spending programs for other needs that were more social in character. He says the lesson of the GI Bill was that it provided self-reliance for those who had earned the benefits.